going on, y'all? It's Cat Magnus the Propagandist. Today is Tuesday, April 13th, and this is the Awakened Demagogue Podcast. So according to LinkedIn, today is my 10-year anniversary of being a blogger. I first established my blog, yes, 10 years ago, on WordPress.com. It's now WordPress.org, self-hosted and designed and whatnot. It's gone through a few name changes. I know I had Politically Grounded at one point, Catalina Gooden or something like that at another point. It's gone through quite a few reinventions. I've decided to stick with Awakened Demagogue, though. That feels right, and it's been going pretty, okay. The traffic is okay, and the podcast is Awakened Demagogue. All that feels really right. And I'm just grateful to be where I am in life right now overall, especially in the wake of my mom's passing and being able to say that I work for myself and I wake up when I'm done sleeping most of the time, a lot of the times, not as much anymore because I have stuff to do, but, for the most part, I make my schedule, I work when I want, I work how I want, I do what I need to do for myself, and it's good to be in a space where I am doing these things for myself. After years of wondering if I would ever even, be good enough to get a job as a research associate or something, now I am working for myself, applying my home skill of writing. It's actually a natural gift that I have nurtured over time through education and, content writing work. And I also combine my visual merchandising and web design, graphic design, all those skills to do communications consulting. And, of course, my education takes me into the government and political realm, exactly where I wanted to be. And I am grateful for all of the blessings that have come my way over time. As I look back over the last 10 years, I recognize that, I had quintessential naysayers and folks who challenged me or mocked me, and they were, as usual, so-called close friends and not so much family members. My family's always been kind of indifferent. My mom didn't respond well to how I worked because she couldn't understand it, her being a boomer at the time when she was alive. So, that was challenging. That's probably the only family challenge that I got, One brother, he wants to be an entrepreneur himself and can't get it together. And the other one, he just believes in his sweet baby sister. And everyone else, their cousins or anything. They were pretty much indifferent. But as far as, really wanting support or just really experiencing any haters or people who didn't believe, they were definitely the alleged close friends who weren't entirely friends in the first place. Those are mainly who I received any pushback from. And, as I don't know if it's a full-on Stockholm syndrome. I don't think it's a Stockholm syndrome. It's definitely a sign of my codependency, right? I would continue to nurture these toxic and unsupportive relationships from toxic and unsupportive people. And I think a lot of that comes from one of the things that I've realized now. My serious and very deep-seated abandonment issues and trouble with neglect of various sorts. That goes back to a trauma of way back from when I was an infant. I've realized I was an infant in the high chair, and my brothers are late teens, and my mom was at work, and nobody wanted to be bothered with the baby at night. Put her in the high chair in front of the TV and let her be. And after a while, I didn't like that, and I cried, and I cried, and I screamed, and I wailed, and I cried. I can still see the tears in my eyes from when I was 1 year old in that damn high chair in the living room in Baltimore. Left to my own devices. No one there but me. I had no idea how I was going to get out of it. I just knew I needed to get out, and I wanted to get out. Nobody would come. And as I think about that moment, I go back to that moment mentally and emotionally. The feeling that I have when I go back to that moment is the feeling that I have in every bad relationship. That's the feeling of doom when I think maybe someone's cheating. That's why I can't let go of some people who reject me. I can't, I like romantic or personal rejection, I don't take that well at all. And it all goes back to that one moment when I was an infant and I felt abandoned and alone. And it's weird because I've always had this trouble with the spiritual community. And we're saying, well, just, you know, they really gaslight you really bad, actually. They always say, it's all in your mind, it's all you, it's all in your head, you need to figure it out. There's nothing wrong with anyone else or anything else on earth. The only thing that's wrong is you, and you need to fix you. And then everything around you will be better. And there's some bit to that. It's not so much to say there's something wrong with any person going through things or experiencing bad relationships or, you know, what have you, situations, challenges in life. It's really about looking within yourself, like, to their point, it's about realizing that you want more bad enough to make that change. And it's not so much about changing and fixating and beating yourself up. It's more so about realizing that in many situations, not all, but in many situations, we do have some level of control to where we can make a shift or a change. And the change may not come immediately. We may have to do a lot of research and planning first. But if we make the effort, the things around us can change. We can make new friends and get rid of old ones. We can move to a new city and have new surroundings. We can make a career change, you know, take classes, get certifications, go back to school, get a new degree, what have you, take, you know, a trade, whatever it is. Those things that, you know, we really can control, and we really can change our lives and, you know, the things around us in that way. But for any, you know, potential situation, to just say it's all in your head, you know, the person isn't really beating you or you're asking for it, and you need to figure out what you're doing to call that into your life. You need to figure out what you're doing that's making that person be mean to you. Or that person isn't really abusing you, that's just how you perceive it. Like, that's really the dangerous fine line that a lot of fake, you know, neo-pagan, new age spirituality, you know, puts into people's minds, that everything's in your head. It's really just collective gaslighting to get people who are already traumatized and in a very depressed state to feel even more self-loathing, and then need to buy someone's book, the need to get a reading from someone, the need to go on this expensive retreat that, you know, they had to max out their credit cards and take out a loan for, or a second mortgage for, or something. All of it is really just a ploy to get people riled up in their emotions and in believing anything, any snake oil that's given to them or offered to them, right? And stay on the hook. And I don't respect a lot of the spiritual community, especially the coaching community, with their exorbitant $10,000 a month, because, you know, I read The Secret and now I think I'm a magical guru expert, you know what I mean? So pay me $10,000 a month because I don't need to work more than 2 hours a week. What? It's weird. And it's all, you know, honestly, the people who are spiritual leaders, and it's not just, you know, the spiritual community. We also find it, like, in the church and organized religion, heavy, you know, abusers, predators, narcissists, whatever, however they fit into, like, that spectrum of predatory behavior and personality. They're usually the ones who are the spiritual leaders or the spiritual teachers, you know, the pastors, the bishops. And, you know, there are some who genuinely feel called to serve a higher purpose and a higher calling. And then there are some who just say, oh, this is a really easy way to get some suckers and for some men to get some ass or some access to people's children. And, you know, let's go, let's, you know, make it all about God. And, you know, when we talk about the Bible, that's why there's a multitude of scriptures that say, do not rely on the philosophies of this world. Do not rely upon your own human limited wisdom. You know, watch out for false prophets. All of these speak to, you know, discerning between someone who is anointed and truly serving God or a higher power, a higher calling with a pure heart and intent. And the myriad, the multitude of predators that are all over the place. They, you know, the thing about the spiritual community is that they don't really have a set standard or, a, you know, even ideal code. like, at least with organized religion, there's some kind of ideal code of ethics or some real goal. And in the New Age community, in the spiritual community, it's all about, you know, be like your favorite influencer. Oh, Marianne Wilson's been around for a long time, so everyone should try to be like her. Teal Swan, you know, for all of her scandals and things, still doing pretty well. We should try to be like her. You know, she's evolved. We should try to be like her. Who else is that? You know, Greg Braden for something, although he's more in the, like, scientific kind. But, you know, he still talks that good talk. You know, Abraham Hicks or you know, Louise Hay. Whoever, you know what I mean? Find your favorite guru influencer, you know, Deepak Chopra, now low-key Oprah, you know, and follow that person and try to be as much like that person. And that's my problem with the spiritual community, is that they water down, they repackage and sell ancient philosophies that actually go back to Hinduism, the oldest organized religion on the planet. And they just water it down and bastardize it, repackage it, and sell it to the clueless folks, often housewives or people out of domestic, you know, relationships or something, and just sucker them in. And I went through that phase when I first got into spirituality, because I didn't believe in God the way, and I don't still don't believe in God the way that the mainstream corrupted church teaches about God. Making us codependent on some figure that is not actually God, but, you know, a symbolic anthropomorphization of God to help us digest the spiritual hierarchies in the universe. And so, you know, before being able to say what I just said, I just know that I didn't vibe with, you know, how the church spoke about God. So with that, I was agnostic, and I was also very miserable. My life wasn't going anywhere. You know, I had my blog, and that's pretty much all I had. And my blog didn't make money, but it was a nice, you know, it was a nice hobby. And I would sit there and I would, you know, just look at conversations on social media and then blog about it and give my thoughts and, you know, be pompous at times. And that caught some literary agents' attentions and whatnot. And at that time, I didn't have a manuscript ready, so I just, you know, had to keep blogging. And so I kept blogging off and on, you know. I had to do my visual merchandising and figure out, you know, how to make money or something. You know, lived in New York with my cousin for a while. Things happened with my mom. She started getting sick, fell out in the street, you know, other family issues. And then I came back home. Actually, all that happened before my blog, but yeah. And then it was in that misery of moving back home because my mom was sick and I was back, you know, at home with the drama and the trauma and the, you know, the mess and the muck and the stagnation, and all I had was my blog, and I would just blog, you know, watch what people were doing and saying online and talk smack about them and just write. And it's interesting because now the things that I've been doing for 10 years is considered OSINT, or open source intelligence gathering, which is basically just, you know, anything you can find on the internet or the dark net, you know, readily. It's typically not classified, you know, unclassified or declassified information, unless something just happened to get leaked somewhere on the dark net or some obscure website no one knows about on the main internet. And, you know, disinformation, monitoring conversations on Twitter or Facebook and watching the trends of people's mindsets and consciousness, what narratives are driving the day, the daily conversation, and so on and so forth. I used to do that and blog about it, you know, just as a hobby, because, you know, I was miserable in my lack of a tower that I wished that was ivory, and yeah. That was it. And now here I am doing that. I don't do that as much anymore. So I'm focused on actually really making money, because I don't have top security, you know, top secret clearance, and I didn't serve 10 years in the army to get that, or the military. It would have been Air Force if I joined the military. But, you know, if I, you know, since I didn't do those things, you know, I'm not good enough, you know, and that's what it's like dealing with people in that world, you know, if you don't look exactly like them or something that they can comprehend, you're not good enough. And I think that is part of why a lot of people had an issue with Trump being president, because he was not something people could readily identify, recognize, and vibe with. People didn't know what to do with him. They didn't know how to make sense of him. I've run into that a lot of times. Mainly like just like looking for jobs or trying to make the career pivot, you know, people really want to see like a resume or a line of just like one line of work. You have to be very specialized. The thing is, like, we're hyper specialized, and for some reason we've been hyper specialized, and you know, the industries have been hyper specialized for so long that people didn't think about getting to someone who actually matters. They for some reason think that humans, you know, people are only capable of doing one thing. They think people are only capable of having one career path, or doing, you know, having one main skill set. They can only do one thing. And, you know, if you could do more than one thing, then, oh my gosh, you're super high level and you should be able to lead and do all these things. But if you haven't done that for a minimum of 10 years, then even though you're multi-talented, you're not capable of doing that either. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, what in the hell? Like, I am an entire communications firm within one person. You know what I mean? Like, I just can do it, you know, on my own, freelance, one or two or three clients at a time, and just do the whole thing, like, myself. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there like me, you know, we're the freelancers, we're the entrepreneurs, we're the people who just work for themselves or, you know, start something new. And it's interesting because I've seen on LinkedIn a lot of people like that were in the military or in DOD or whatever, like they are now starting their own consultancies and, you know, working on being entrepreneurs based on their own work, or they want to be government contractors. And the thing about contract work is that you know, a lot of people, and I see this big mainstream conversation about get your LLC, or whatever, and they think, and it's positioned like, oh, we'll get an LLC, and then all the name, and then you can do all this, you get all these amazing tax breaks, and then, for the most part, none of that even applies unless you are establishing an LLC for like an organization or something. And a lot of people have LLCs, either, you know, it's like show corporations, or, you know, just a name to have. And the thing is, like, if you're an independent contractor, unless you're like working for an MLM type thing, if you're an independent contractor, you are expected, if not required at some point, to establish a legal entity such as an LLC, or, you know, INC Inc. or something like that, you know, incorporate, or you know, get your articles of organization, because of the dynamic of the business relationship and the fact that when they pay you in that contract role, you are responsible for your benefits, your taxes, all the expenses, so on and so forth. So you really do operate as a business, even if it's a contract job. So that's kind of an interesting little thing for some people who may be listening and may or may not understand. So it's interesting to see the folks from like the DOD and whatnot branch off and establish their own, you know, entities, business entities. Like I said, I think it just a lot of them are like contractors, so, you know, they kind of have to. And then it looks more grand than what it may really be. You know, I think, like, on social media and the whole conversation about, you know, get your business, your LLC, you know, everyone is so caught up in the romance of it. And it's actually just really practical, and it's just paperwork that you get someone else to do. And, you know, I think in the mainstream conversation, because a lot of people don't look at themselves as businesses, or they don't think about what kind of services they can provide, they may focus on, you know, the girls, you know, everyone wants to print t-shirts, or they want to, you know, sell food plates, you know, meal prep, you know, something basic that takes a lot of overhead and product pushing, in that way. But the real money is in services, right? So, I mean, if you're going to do food and cater or meal prep, you know, if you're going to you know, do t-shirts. Don't just sell the t-shirts, but, you know, a whole pipeline of, you know, creating the design and then wholesale, you know, branded t-shirts or something of that nature. So it's really, and, you know, and just thinking about it, like, it's interesting to see the contrast between the higher level professionals and what they're doing and how they're handling it, and then, you know, the regular peanut gallery folks who are just following memes, right? And 10 years of doing that, just, you know, starting out as, like, a bitter person in, like, her late teens, early 20s, just venting because she was miserable, and now, like, actually as a pro and having to look at the other pros, like, you guys are freaking idiots, but, you know, okay, I just have to play the game and do it myself. And I have to say that I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of myself for how far I've come. The fact that I kept going when, you know, I did have a couple of naysayers or a lot of people doubted me. And a lot of people who know me growing up, since then, have always known me to just, you know, not always have money or not always be, you know, bawling out of control or, you know, the person you always leave behind because she's always broke. You know, I was that person. And now a lot of those people themselves are broke, struggling, or maybe their finances are okay, but everything else is in their life is a hot fucking mess. And, you know, I'm struggling. I have my PTSD and whatnot, but I'm also in a space where I have peace. I have me. I only had that one major trial, that one major task that God knew was the only thing I could handle. I'm working on getting other things in my life in place the way I want and need them and would prefer them to. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, if there was a competition, which some people for some reason decided there was when there wasn't, but if there was a competition, I won. And some people would try to say, well, no, I won because I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And it's like, yeah, but you're still miserable and you can't function half the time. And yeah, your house may be nice, but your actual life is fucking shit show. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I don't see anything to brag on there. I don't, you know, I'll be 34 this year. I have no children. I am starting a new phase of my life. I don't have a baby daddy that I hate. I don't have a husband that I shouldn't have married. It's just me, and sometimes it's really hard, and it's really lonesome, and within that, it's really painful. Thinking about, you know, one of the hardest rejections that my soul still has trouble accepting, you know, it just reminds me, like, as I plan certain things for myself to take care of myself, I think about the fact that, gosh, I really wish that I could take this trip with this person and have this, you know, moment and experience with this particular person and then have to reconcile and accept the fact that that will never happen. And overall, I think that's probably a blessing for that to be the biggest problem in my life, that, you know, I'm in the process of planning trips and, you know, a guy that I like doesn't like me enough. You know what I mean? Like, very elementary if we think about it. And I'm grateful even for that, because it could be worse. I could have the problems that my naysayers now have. I could be that person who was the naysayer and is now, you know, looking to the person I said nay to for help or something. So it's interesting how, you know, turnabout's fair play and everything kind of comes full circle, and you just kind of sit back and reflect on all of that and what that means, right? Because, you know, what it means is that I was on the right path and I was doing the right thing in life, you know, and karma, life, God, you know, the cosmic, however you define it, whatever you call it, whatever you label it, however you identify with it, in the end favored me, right? You know, and so, not, you know, people don't have to, like, die or end up homeless or something for them to lose in the cosmic competition, you know. It really can be about peace. You know, who comes out with the most peace in the end? Who comes out with the most abundance? How they define abundance in the end? Some would say, you know, and one of them would say, oh, well, how's that loneliness? And I used to hate the loneliness. And there are moments where I still do despise the loneliness. But at that time when I said I hated the loneliness, it was because I hated going through what I was going through without a loving partner or someone to really be in the trenches with me. I absolutely hated that. And I know, like, towards the end, my mom made a comment. She just wants to be cared for by someone that doesn't hate her. And I'm like, Mommy, I don't hate you. And I don't want you to feel like I hate you. I just hate this situation. I hate that I can't do enough. I hate that I'm not enough. I hate that I can't fix it. I hate that. The only thing I could probably say about disliking her is that she could be so stubborn against her best interests. So, like, I hated having a fight with her over the basic stuff. But I didn't hate her as a person. I mean, of course, you know, as someone's child, you're going to have resentments. As a parent, you're going to have regrets. And some people would say, how do you know that you don't have children? I'm like, yeah, but I was blessed enough to have my parent, you know. I don't know what it is with these adults or whatever they call themselves who think that the only possible way one can understand a parent-child dynamic is by being a parent. And it's like, I know not everyone has their parents. I don't know my father. All I know is his name. So, like, I know, like, that happens, but there's, like, this assumption for some reason with, you know, us overgrown children. Let's call ourselves what we are. These overgrown children who have children, and they themselves, let's be honest, don't really know what the fuck they're doing. But everybody wants to write a book about it because they did the thing, right? And yet, there's this key component. And, you know, it's one thing that my mom used to remind me of when I always tell her I hated kids. And she's like, yeah, but you were once one. And I'm like, that's fine, but I don't want to deal with them. Ew. And, like, in the present time. And, you know, as I'm just thinking about, like, the whole parental conversation, it's as if adults, you know, discount the fact that children are human beings. So, you know, the only way one can understand a parent or a child is by being a parent themselves. And it's like, hello, I've been someone's child. I know what it's like. You can tell me all of your mom's stories, and it's just like, yeah, my mom used to do the same thing. I feel you. I'm glad I don't have to experience that. But I understand because I had a parent. You know what I mean? I was once someone's child. You were once someone's child, you know? And then there's the thing about people wanting to parent in a way that's different from how they were brought up so they can be quote-unquote better parents. And then, of course, they always end up being just like their parents because that's who we are. That's the subconscious impression of life and parenting that we receive as infants and toddlers and adolescents. It's going to be in our subconscious and unconscious mind, so it's always going to manifest itself. But we can't, you know, people consciously want to avert that inevitability. And that's fine, but it's the parenting conversation bothers me because it's also kind of like the marriage one. It's just more toxic. It's more narcissistic. People parent from their own wants, needs, and desires. A lot of people have children, period, for their own wants, needs, and desires. As if children are not micro mini human beings that have to grow into fully functioning adults. It's always all about the parent. You know, another adult could not have possibly have ever been someone's child or ever had to, you know, take care of a child, you know, someone else's child for a time, or, you know, be the godmother or something like that. You can't possibly know anything about children because you don't have any. Well, okay, what the fuck else did I do for the first, I don't know, 18 years of my life? Be someone's child. Okay, so if someone who was once someone's child says, maybe the kid might want to think. You don't know because you're not a parent. Okay, but if I'm speaking like the child might want to think, it's because I've been someone's child and I probably wanted the thing. And I think, as the ignorant Team No Kids person, if parents would get out of their own egos with their own parenting, and I think that's kind of where we have the whole debate with discipline. It's because there are more parents who are trying to get out of their own egos and recognize that their children are people and human beings with feelings, you know, and thoughts. And, oh my God, how dare they do that? How dare they be human? You know, there's more of that trend. I think it's just a little excessive because now those little people have no concept of discipline. A lot of them anyway. But I think, you know, just for parents and people who want to be parents or what have you, like, stop making your parenting and your having a child about you, because this is another person with their own thoughts, feelings, and attitudes that's going to go through the vicissitudes of life. And the job as the parent is to love, nurture, and care, but also prepare the child for the vicissitudes of life. That's why fairy tales are actually, like, real grim fairy tales were actually grim. It's because they were intended to prepare us as wee babes for the vicissitudes of life. Like, there's nothing wrong with treating mini human beings like they're human beings, right? It's a tangent I got on because it's weird how people make their parenting about them and then can't figure out how they fuck their kids up. And why they're, you know, the kids end up on drugs or in meetings or just actually hating their parents. I don't know. For me, my mom, I don't know. I mean, she had her own depression, but she never really made the parenting about her. But by the time she got to me, by the time she even had me, she was 40. So trust me, she lived an entire life and a half or two and learned lots of lessons by the time she got to me. So she had a little wisdom under her belt by the time she got to me. I'm sure my brothers have a far different story. My eldest brother despises me because his story is so different. But, you know, and I appreciate that. And you know, by the time she had me, she also had, like, a good 20 years of pediatric nursing and seeing the absolute worst of all parents and what they could possibly do to their children. And then, you know, we moved to Georgia when I was 6. So she really saw the worst of humanity in that job, and she always passed that knowledge on to me because she wanted me to give her grandkids, and I said no thank you to it. I still say no thank you, but that doesn't mean I didn't retain anything about, you know, the best practices that she tried to instill into me. You know, even if one day I so happen to have a child, I have so much knowledge from someone who's seen the worst of humanity. And I think that's one thing, not just about parenting, but just, you know, people, period. Like, a lot of people speak from ignorance, right? And they speak loudly and strongly and proudly from, like, just such unmitigated ignorance. And they're just, like, 10 toes down for the stupidity, right? And when you become exposed to things like the worst of humanity and what they do to children, I mean, yeah, pediatric doctor, pediatric nurse, it's not just about giving shots at the doctor's office. Like, my mom worked in the ER at the city, Children's Hospital. She saw the worst of humanity every weekend, holidays included. I know way more about the, you know, how sex work, and I don't mean like strippers, I mean like chicks that be out on the street, you know, walking the block, you know what I mean? I know so much about that stuff that I probably would not care to know, but I'm glad that I know, because I have a realistic worldview, right? I'm not naive. I don't think that because, you know, something did or did not happen in my little microcosm of a bubble that it does or does not exist based on whether or not I experienced it. I think that is, like, I mean, talk about putting your head in the sand, and, like, I don't know what it is about guys, but, like, that's just how they operate, right? Like, if they did not see it, feel it, or experience it, it cannot possibly exist in the fucking universe, and that is the most frustrating shit I've ever encountered, okay? Like, how do you come to this conclusion that it can't exist because you didn't do it? And I actually had a doctor like that. My mom was in the hospital last. Oh, your samples were contaminated. These were all wrong. These were bad samples. And it's like, okay, and even if we went to the hospital, they still said the same thing. It's like, well, it was still wrong. And I'm just almost like, so because you weren't there and it had to be wrong? What the fuck? That is so insulting. And then, of course, he did his own test and it's the same thing that everybody's been saying the entire fucking time. Right? Because the world does not, you know, life in the universe does not, you know, these things do not operate based upon whether or not we approve of it. You know, God does not exist based on us giving him, her, it permission to exist. Nothing in life happens because we decided to say it could. We are not truly God Almighty in that sense. People do not love us or leave us because we decided it's okay that they can. They just do. That's why we ended up hurt or heartbroken. You know what I mean? So, I don't understand this whole mindset about, well, I didn't see, you know, Pixar, it didn't happen. Oh, well, it, you know, so it, anything on social media is now staged or faked or photoshopped. So, if someone is, like, actually probably getting raped on a Facebook Live, everyone will say it's fake, it's staged, and while the girl is getting, like, or the guy, whoever, whatever, is getting, like, raped and killed on live, everyone will be in the comments saying it's fake. Well, yeah, so that's real helpful to anyone seeking justice in that scenario. Hello? And, you know, let's talk about, you know, the whole sex trafficking conversation. If everything on the internet is now automatically deemed fake, how does anyone expect to combat sex trafficking, human trafficking, or any other major social problem? And I think that's a good place to let this segment go and get back to it in the next one. Alright y'all, round two. So in the last segment, I went on a bit of a rant about various topics, all stemming from the reality that I have been blogging for 10 years, and then I went into, you know, all the things surrounding that and some various thoughts and things. And where I left off on was my concern for social issues in the social media age. Specifically how most people see almost anything on the internet these days. It could be a photo, it could be a video, and everyone's first thought is to say, it's fake, it's staged, it's fake, it's staged. And in the last segment, I know I used the example of someone could be, you know, there could be a live snuff film going on Facebook Live, and people would just say, oh, it's fake, it's staged, it's not real. And it's very concerning. Because the more people become desensitized to things that, you know, and I think that a lot of times things are deemed as fake or staged because, you know, sometimes they do, like, really look that way. And then I think sometimes some scenes are just too much for some people to handle. Even if it is staged, the possibility of it seems almost unbelievable. So people just automatically reject it, you know, and it must be fake and it must be staged. And then, you know, there's just this whole, I don't know, I guess there's this collective desire to be able to point out the flaws or the wrongs of someone else. Like, ah, you were wrong, ah, you were wrong, I was right. It's like we're all striving for some kind of validation or legitimacy in the eyes of our remote peers, if you will, on the internet. A lot of people, you know, the conversation, clout chasing and whatnot. Excuse me, drinking water and dropping wrong, hold on. There we go. But it's concerning because people are becoming detached, especially with COVID and the, you know, the whole quarantine and everyone being on restrictions and whatnot. You know, everything is experienced remotely. Everything is experienced by video, social media, Zoom, Google Meet. I use that a lot with my clients. And the more that we get used to this new normal, the less we realize that there are human beings on the other end of these teleconferences or these videos or these live streams. It's easy to dehumanize people. Everyone wants to be a commodity, a celebrity, an influencer, a brand. And that inherently dehumanizes us, right? Like, there's this striving to want to be, like, famous and have our money together so the next pandemic, you know, or, like, we're just recession-proof people or something. But when we think about, like, a business, a service, a product, it's very inhumane. Like, we dehumanize anything because the product is like a phone or a computer, you know, the headset that I'm using to record this podcast, you know, the laptop that I'm using to edit and record the podcast. These are just commodities. These are like real world hardcore commodities. And to want to be a personal brand. And it's tricky because now, in the current job market, in this new normal, your social media presence and everything about you is now your personal brand. You need a personal brand just to get a basic-ass job. Like, it's not even about becoming a millionaire. You have to be a commoditized brand just to get a job and mind your business and have all your other shit on private. And we are just further and further going down this rabbit hole of dehumanization of the collective. And that is very dangerous because when we think about human trafficking or crimes against humanity, such as rape being used as a tool of war, and yes, that is a real thing, people. There are some groups, they typically tend to be like non-state actors, like a warlord, and their like whole, you know, group. And they will use rape, like the rape, systematic raping of women and children in certain locales to get the either tribe or whoever they're going against to either submit, or that's just a part of, you know, the torture. You know, they kill the men, rape the women and children, and then there's just decimation of that sort. So when we think about like humanitarian issues, it's funny when I think about that word because in the professional sense of the word, the higher level, it's actually just, you know, the impacts on humanity of war, or war's impacts on humanity. That's literally what humanitarian is. So when we talk about like natural disasters and other like kind of social problems, like human trafficking is and is not kind of a byproduct of war. It gets a little murky there, but anyway. But, you know, to these humanitarian issues, it's really hard to make sense of what's going on and what can be done with it, especially as a collective. And, you know, there's another thing, another point that I want to kind of bring up. You know, in developing countries such as Lagos, or Lagos, that experienced attacks from their government, I believe it was, yes, it was last year, because I remember scrolling through that and my mom was in her room, being unwell. And in developing countries, I actually believe the United Nations and, you know, the First World Group, G3s and whatnot, they actually, you know, people in developing nations actually think that the big wigs care or should care. And one of the unfortunate realities in getting balls deep into international relations and foreign policies, knowing and learning and understanding that they do not care. And if you're going to be a part of that world or in that professional realm, such as I, you gotta make, I don't want to say make peace with it, because that's kind of an acceptance and standing by and, you know, subscribing to the status quo, but you gotta eat it. You know what I mean? You gotta eat it for a while. You gotta humble yourself enough to accept that that is the reality now, and then decide: do you want to go along with to get along, or do you want to like make radical change? Do you want to be an activist? Do you want to work within the system to hopefully inspire, you know, actual improvements, systematic improvements that actually support the people around of the world? And the thing about it is, even if, you know, just regular citizens of any country, developing or developed, first world, you know, developing, third world, not thought about, whatever you are, like, the people, especially with the internet, and this push to bring the internet to everyone, anywhere on the planet, we the people have the most power and the most clout as a collective. And it is only going to take a mass, like, global revolution. And I don't mean, like, the whole Black Lives Matter and everyone doubling down on their PC rhetoric. And, you know, China saying, oh, well, look at the United States. They suck, too. So we're going to keep going. You see, the China didn't wave their fingers at the U.S. and say, we are better. And they need to stop. They said, look, the U.S. does it too, so we're fine with our crimes against humanity. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we're not committing crimes. We're governing. Look at the United States. They have to handle their riffraffs and re-education camps and genocide of Uyghurs is how we deal with our quote-unquote riffraffs. You know, that's China's position. And, only, you know, the populace in mass actually taking action. And we saw, you know, Black Lives Matter is a really good example of how the system rides the waves and tides of public opinion and human consciousness. It just rides it and responds and then gets back to doing what it came to do. You know what I mean? Or the leaders in charge within the system. You know, they ride the waves and they respond and they react. And then, you know, they manage it and they calm it down. And then they get back to riding the waves of doing what they came here to do. And it will take literally, probably like a burning down, like an actual, maybe global, like a World War III of the people versus governments. And that's like beyond unlikely. Just for the levels of complexity it would take to organize, much less execute that. But that's what it would really kind of take. Because as we get, and that's what it'll take to really get, like, the big wigs at the top to change their ways. And they will only change out of self-preservation. They're not going to change because it's the right thing to do. No one in power is genuinely changing themselves or the system out of the kindness of their hearts. They're doing it for self-preservation. Now, I'm not to say that there have not been any truly altruistic, you know, governors, presidents, kings, queens, whatever. You know, there are some who really have the public interest in mind. You know, in America we had JFK, who got assassinated. You know, Catherine the Great was a whole czar of Russia, but she was one of the best ones because she said, oh, my goodness, these freaking peasants think my dead husband is alive. No. They need to know how to read so that when we run a story, they know the shit's not happening. You know what I mean? And that's how they had their own renaissance, if you will, in Russia, based on Catherine the Great. You know, and it was like a golden age for the country. And even though it still operated under the feudal system, the people of Russia, you know, they blossomed to a point, if you will. The same can kind of be said for China. It's an, you know, modern day China. It's very much authoritarian. You know, CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, runs the show. But it has also invested in its infrastructure. It's also invested in the people. The CCP and the government system has successfully, you know, raised millions of people out of poverty. That China has more, you know, billionaires than the United States, I think, or something like that. And so, you know, there's this there's a lot to be said for governance in the sense of good governance, which is ensuring that the people within the society that one is governing over have all of their basic needs, food, water, shelter, in this day and age, electricity, the internet, you know, comms, communications, whether it's a phone or a computer or something to, you know, stay in touch. There's something to be said for autocrats in that space. No matter how freedom loving or not they are, there are some that really do try to enrich their societies. But as far as the full popular sovereignty hitting critical mass, I mean, hell, we gotta fight to get that back as a full concept in America right now. But on a global scale, it's going to take, like, literally banging at the doors with, like, torches and pitchforks, you know, like legit go old school, you know what I mean? Like, veterans turning on their government because they are sick and tired of the shit. That is what it would take to get, like, this real shift in global governance and just how people in power operate. In relation to the people, human nature is human nature, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So it doesn't matter which generation is going to have the power-loving figurehead. It's always going to be some. There's always going to be some power-hungry nutcase. There's going to be the ones that are truly altruistic, but then lose themselves in their own altruism and then become narcissists. And then there are some who are just sociopaths and don't give a shit about anybody. That's just how power and you know, human personas work. But as far as changing or evolving the dynamic between the power structure and those who sit in power and the people who are just, you know, governed, it's going to take a massive super uprising. I mean, Black Lives Matter was very exciting last year because of the global conversation that it drove, and but, you know, like a year later, really looking back, all we've gotten was some corporate platitudes, a few more Black women in diversity and inclusion roles in corporations, and they may or may not be heard, but, you know, they're there for, you know, the sake of, you know, optics, and that's about it. The governments really didn't change anything. No policies really came forward. We have a defund the police campaign here in America because, well, the shit hit the fan here in America. But are we really, truly defunding police? And I mean, and the thing is, by the very nature of how America operates, like, there's not going to be some sweeping top-down, you know, the federal government passed this particular bill or made it law, and now everyone in the country, every police precinct in the country, that's still going to be executed at the state level, state and local levels. Most laws are effectively executed in America as it is, effectively executed at the state and local levels, right? But everyone's looking for some sweeping thing at the federal level, and it's like, no, this is a trickle-down country, okay? Everything, well, kind of trickles up if you really think about it, but like, it's kind of backwards, but, you know, everything really starts at the state and local level. So if you really want to see that switch, that change, that defunding of police, you know, you live in America, you might want to move to the place that has implemented that policy, you know, experimentally. Let us know how that goes. But, you know, getting back to just the bigger issue of social problems, and this wasn't really off topic if we want to talk about institutional racism and the effects of that, police brutality and the effects of that. What's interesting, you know, when we talk about the video conversation, though, there was a recent video about two officers in Virginia going after a Black man, but he was a second lieutenant in the Army. I believe it's Army. And, you know, that video went viral. One of the police officers, the one who was specifically aggressive for no good reason, he was fired. So that's, you know, swift justice, because, whoo, this is a contentious time. We really do not need to be disrespecting our troops on record and letting that fly. It's bad enough we can't figure out the racism thing, but you can't just, can't disrespect the troops because they're black. I mean, jeez, they signed up to die anyway. If you really think about it, it's a sick joke, but it's true. And, you know, when we think about these social problems and social media, and, like, social media is really great for moments like that, but it seems to only really be effective when it comes to racial outrage. You know, when we talk about human and sex trafficking, I mean, and that gets a little murky, because, like TikTok and stripper, like, I mean, I don't know, I mean, I kind of know, but, like, I really went down the whole rabbit hole on TikTok, and it's, like, It's like a haven for sex workers. It's mainly strippers, and they'll, you know, sex work, and we do this and we do that, and sex workers are this, and they're proud of their professions. You know, they make good money, and yeah, I respect anyone's conscious decision to do what they want to do in life, whether or not I personally agree with it. I respect everyone's decision, everyone's right to make their decisions over their bodies and their lifestyles, and deal with the consequences as they come, whether it's in this life or the next. And that's what true liberty and respect is about. I think that might be why I'm kind of a neocon, though, because, you know, I can't go full religious, right, and say, you know, trying to legislate. That's, you know, just a little sidebar. Evangelicals and, like, the religious right, they're all about this liberty crap, but they actually function like theocrats. Just throwing that out there. Anyway, back to the point. Which is anti-American theocracy in America. Like, they do not. They, like, are mutually exclusive. They cannot coexist. But, you know, tell that to weirdos on the right, on the extreme right. So I don't go that far. But in any case, if we want to talk about these social problems and social media, it's like, it's like the human consciousness, especially with the younger generations that spend most of their time on social media. It's like we only take certain things seriously. We take dying animals or abused dogs and animals seriously. We take videos of police brutality seriously. And then we start a big, you know, public debate, and the pundits jump on it and have lots of fun. And then we may or may not take abuse towards women and children seriously. It depends on the context and who's reporting it and who's talking about it, and if the video is considered to be real or fake, honest or staged, and authentic or staged, excuse me. And that is really troublesome, how we as a people pick and choose what is and is not real, because we are so far removed from reality by being, you know, right now forced, or borderline forced, to remain in our homes and live life vicariously through our cell phones and our computers and through the internet and social media. We are now so detached from reality. We get to pick and choose what is real. And in the last segment, I said there is just this frustrating, you know, consciousness that's going around, where people think that if they did not personally see it or experience it, it does not exist. And now, because we are so far removed, and we are in a technical culture where, as a collective in the comments, I mean, and these could be trolls driving these comments, like, these could be, like, actual, like, Chinese, I just read about it earlier. They actually have, like, a civilian cyber force of just internet trolls that are dedicated to promoting the ideals and worldview of the CCP. And, or just the general, you know, trolls from Russia. You know, they can get into the, and the Russian trolls, or just Russians, period, they are very, very active on social media. They tend to end up all over my feeds. I don't even understand how they get there sometimes, but it always bothers me, because every time I see Russian content, I wonder if that's, like, an operative or a regular person that has access to the internet. I always, you know, raise an eyebrow when I see Russian content. But, you know, these can really, but back to the point, these can be real threats. These can be real trolls. These can be real, this can be real misinformation of just people in the comments, and it's just a white, is right face for these goofy ass Americans saying, ah, this is fake, ah, this is fake, ah, this is fake. And it could be absolutely real. But because most people are so simple and just want to go along with, you know, what's right, or just be keyboard warriors or whatever the heck, you know, there could be like this whole subconscious campaign of saying that anything but these things is not real. It does not exist. It's staged. It's fake. It's photoshopped. You know, anything from NASA is photoshopped. I mean, way to undermine U.S. space superiority by anyone and everyone designating any image released by NASA and its technology. You know, we got Curiosity, Perseverance, you know, kicking it on Mars. You know what I mean? And you know, we got the probes and whatnot sending us images back from Jupiter. And it can easily be a troll that says, all of this looks like CGI. All of this is fake. And if enough people in the comments say that, what NASA says won't matter. Because guess what? It's a government brand. It's a government-run operation. And governments do nothing but lie, so it's fake. And then there goes the public morale that would ultimately fund our space program. And it's critical right now because we have hypersonic hypersonic weapons, rail guns, which are energy weapons, and laser weapons being developed all in the Asia Pacific region. And a lot, those are actually intended to become anti-satellite weapons, which means ground-based space weapons, right? They're intended to target and, you know, disable, dismantle, or destroy our satellites, our space infrastructure. But if nobody even believes that it's there, who's going to fund the Space Force? That would be a military branch specifically dedicated to that. Who would want to keep funding NASA? Who is going to continue to use that technology? Who's going to want to fund NOAA? Because everything in space can't possibly be real, because we never even went to the moon. You know, that's how dangerous a lot of these conspiracy theories being taken seriously is. That's how dangerous the information war and the propaganda war is that we are balls deep in right now. That's how serious these things are. And it gets to the point where we won't even be able to tackle very basic and very personal humanitarian or social issues, because through the lens of social media, through the lens of the internet, and the information, the propaganda, and the narratives that are being fed to us, not just by a corrupt news media, a biased news media, and a corrupt government, but by our nation's adversaries and unspoken, unnamed enemies. You know what I mean? Like, it's deep, because they can just, you start, you know, 15 people in the comments, oh, it's fake, and so then everyone's gonna think it's fake, and it's a snuff film live on Facebook. But nobody believes it's fake, because believes it's real, and then the news will report on it, and some people will believe, oh my god, it was real, because it was on the news, and somebody will say, well, it was not real, because it was reported on the news. So, this is where we are, as far as losing ourselves in social media, and inadvertently, you know, selling out our country, selling out our souls, and giving away our freedoms, not just to our government, but to other governments that are not our friends, because we're so busy believing hype, and we're not using discernment. We're not learning more. We need to continue to learn more, to educate ourselves more independently. I working on signing up for some certs to just kind of, you know, sharpen and enrich my skill set, so I can deliver to my clients better. But, you know, I've been in content creation for a decade now, blogging, and I understand the nuances of, you know, good information architecture, how you lay the content out on a website, how you lay out content on a website or an app. It's not just, you know, a pipeline or a customer journey to get them to buy. If you're doing propaganda, you're not getting them to buy a product. You're sending them down a rabbit hole to change their worldview and their, you know, consciousness, right? Which is why apps like YouTube and TikTok and, you know, now Clapper, Instagram, trying to get in on the TikTok feed with the reels or whatever. All of these feeds, all of these content feeds that, you know, on the surface, these companies just want you to become addicted and spend more screen time so they can get more ad dollars. But when we have actual operatives, info warfare operatives, disinfo operatives specifically, because information warfare is space, cyber, and psyops, and disinformation. So when we have these disinfo agents realizing that people's worldviews can be shaped by these rabbit hole scroll sessions, if you will, or content feeds, or, you know, just YouTube randomly, you know, you go to sleep watching stuff. I go to sleep watching a documentary about fucking ghost towns and woke up with the first Stargate movie. I'm like, how did I even get here? And then you have to understand, like, the subconscious mind and the psyche takes in all the content, everything that is playing, that you are listening to or experiencing while you are asleep. So then you're getting this subconscious programming of whatever it is that's playing. So if I'm a disinfo agent, right, and I really want to change somebody's consciousness and how they view the world and what they think is real and what they think is fake, I'm getting on every video, every post that could be taken seriously and discredited, and everything that shouldn't be taken seriously, and boosting it up and getting my friends and pals and buddies en masse together to throw out the feedback that will change someone's perception or reception of a piece of content. And that's why it's very dangerous in these comments, because we're here having a huge conversation with a bunch of people. We don't know who the fuck they are, and a lot of them are in fact agents, and it's not about the NSA, the FBI, the CIA. It's spying on us, our own people. We have bigger problems right now, and that needs to be taken very, very seriously. I don't know what's going on with me, but feeling a little bit under the weather. I will be posting a corresponding blog hopefully tomorrow or sometime by the end of this week to celebrate 10 years of content creation, blogging, and being I, Catalina Gooden-Cat Magnus, the propagandist, darling. If you would like to work with me and let me work some magic for you the way I do for my clients, check out my website, www.theculturedscholar.com. I just posted the logo of one of my latest clients, a space startup. Super exciting. And I am so grateful for that opportunity and really going in a positive direction with my work there. www.theculturedscholar.com. You want to rock with the kid who the space industry loves to work with and selling space weapons to the government? Go ahead and join in. I almost said join the Trump train. But I ain't on the Trump train. I'm on the MAG train. Okay, so get on the MAG train. Let's get this going. You want to check out the blog or just keep it with the podcast or whatever, you can visit the blog, www.awakeneddemagogue.com. Like I said, you know, check out the older posts. I haven't posted there in a while, but I am working on getting back into that. I had to get my life together. And it's coming together. Yeah, so there will be a celebratory blog up hopefully by the end of this week. And check out my websites. And I will check y'all out soon. Deuce.